Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Gant, Voice of America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Public Broadcast Network. We hope to have a couple of people on today. The first, at some point, will be Daniel New, whose son Michael New recently had his case denied in terms of its appeal before the United States Supreme Court. As we've mentioned before on the show, that has all kinds of implications for the Constitution of this country and the failure of our current political leadership to follow the Constitution of the U.S. And then at 9 o'clock this morning, of course, Mark Glenn of both Crescent and Cross and the American Free Press will join us for our usual end-of-the-week Friday morning conversation about events and personages that are of importance to you and me in the days ahead. As far as important essays on the Internet are concerned, I can't think of too many that are more important than what Jacob Hornberger has to say today at the Future of Freedom Foundation. Dr. Hornberger has been on this show before, and of course his Future Freedom Foundation is having a very important conference next month in Fairfax, Virginia, from June 1 through June 4. If you are interested in freedom and listening to a lot of excellent speakers talk about what is going on in this country today, I would urge you to contact the Future of Freedom Foundation at triplef.org. And you can find out more about that conference. But today, Dr. Hornberger, who is a graduate of the University of Texas Law School, is talking about Ron Paul. And the title of the piece is Ron Paul and the MSNBC Debate. Unbelievably, the Washington Post, according to Dr. Hornberger, has utilized its lead editorial this past Tuesday to specifically question Ron Paul's participation in the rest of the Republican presidential debates, despite all of the polls which show that Ron Paul is believed to have been the first-place finisher in the post-debate polls conducted by MSNBC, ABCNews.com, and C-SPAN. Absolutely incredible that the Washington Post is so afraid of free speech in this country, so afraid of free ideas, so afraid of somebody who can articulate ideas that go back to the Constitution of the United States, that it is indicating that it doesn't believe that Ron Paul's participation in the rest of the Republican presidential debates would be positive. Why? Well, quite possibly because he's the only candidate in the Republican presidential primaries who is not controlled by the powers that be. But Dr. Hornberger's piece today is absolutely interesting reading. If you turn to the Future Freedom Foundation, which again you can find at fff.org, he says that during the recent MSNBC Republican presidential debate, Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul made three profound points on U.S. foreign policy that the American people would be wise to heed. Needless to say, Paul's three points, being libertarian in nature, aren't likely to be favorably received within the Washington, D.C. establishment, especially among lobbyists for the military-industrial complex. Perhaps that is why, despite Paul's first-place finish in post-debate polls conducted by MSNBC, ABCNews.com, and C-SPAN, or maybe because of those results, the Washington Post used its lead editorial on Tuesday to specifically question Paul's participation in the rest of the Republican presidential debates. The first point was that the Iraq War violated the traditional American policy of foreign non-intervention that characterized our nation through most of the first 125 years of its existence. What Paul was referring to was summed up in the speech that John Quincy Adams delivered to Congress on the 50th anniversary of the 4th of July, that America does not, quote, go abroad in search of monsters to destroy, unquote, and that if America were ever to embrace such a policy, the, quote, fundamental maxims of her policy would insensibly change from liberty to force, unquote, and she would become, quote, the dictatress of the world, unquote. What better example of the validity of Adams' admonition than President Bush's war in Iraq? On his own initiative and without the constitutionally required congressional declaration of war, Mr. Bush sent the nation into war against Iraq in an attempt to destroy the monster known as Saddam Hussein. In the process, the United States has become a brutal occupying power that has brought not liberty liberty, but rather death, destruction, torture, mayhem, and civil war to the Iraqi people. Moreover, with its longtime foreign policy of embargoes, sanctions, regime change operations, kidnappings, rendition, torture, detentions, invasions, occupations, and overseas prisons, in the eyes of many people around the world, the United States has indeed become the dictatress of the world. We'll be back with Jacob Hornberger's piece about Congressman Ron Paul and about this absurd Washington Post editorial that says that Ron Paul shouldn't be in the other Republican presidential debates. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
Available from the Republic Broadcasting Network. Broadcasting Network. Broadcasting.
Now you have the time to review every spoken word
on any RBN program
by ordering CDs of any broadcast in either standard audio or MP3 format. Audio CDs are just $10 per hour,
$15 for 2 hours,
and $7 when you order 3 or more hours. An entire month of your favorite broadcaster in MP3 format for just $20. To order, write Republic Broadcasting, 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. That address again is Republic Broadcasting, 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Or for more information, call 1-800-724-2719.
And on the web at rbnlive.com.
Order your CDs today because you can handle the truth.
This is Mark Dankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We have a very special guest today, Daniel New, to talk about the fact that his son, Michael New's, petitioned to the U.S. Supreme Court, asking them to review his case and the lack of due process and the sudden change in the legal standard of review applied to it, has been denied. Thus ends a legal battle that began in August of 1995. If you're listening to this show, you might want to turn to www.mikenew.com to get the latest information on the whole Michael New case, if you've not been following this since August of 1995. And then, of course, when you look at mikenew.com, you'll see the latest information on this denial of Mike New's appeal that occurred at the hands of the United States Supreme Court. I can't think, frankly, of another situation or another case in the last dozen years that illustrates the entire shift in this country from republic to empire, that illustrates the entire shift in this country from a constitutional republic to something else. And we're going to be discussing with Daniel New today what he believes that something else to be and why this entire situation with his son is not only an incredible miscarriage of justice where his son is concerned, but why the implications of this case threaten the political liberties and the political well-being and the constitutional protections of every American. I've known Daniel New since the summer of 1996. This is the first opportunity that he and I have had to chat in quite a number of months now. I'd like to renew my friendship with Daniel and also to reintroduce all of the implications of this case for the listeners, because it's a case that's not going to go away. And in conjunction with what Jacob Hornberger had to say today about Ron Paul's valiant bid for the Republican presidential nomination, we can see the extent to which the great divide today is between globalism and nationalism, and between those who don't believe in the Constitution of this country and those who do. Daniel, how are you, sir?
Well, good morning, Mark. Doing great, and enjoyed listening to this tail end of the last hour. I wanted to just comment before we get to the case at hand that I think the Washington Post is right. I don't think Ron Paul belongs there at all in the debates. He belongs in the White House. He should be president, not just being allowed to run as an also. He doesn't belong in the Republican Party. You and I know that, because it's kind of like owning. If you own all the horses in the race, you don't care who wins. They don't own Ron Paul, and therefore he cannot be allowed. It's that simple.
And I think you're absolutely correct that the Washington Post editorial position on Congressman Paul's continued involvement in these Republican debates shows the extent to which Ron Paul is a complete departure from the controlled character of the rest of this political game, and the extent to which I believe he is the only person running in the Republican primaries who actually believes in the Constitution of this country.
You know, I have great respect for Duncan Hunter and for Tom Tancredo as far as they go, and I think that, and I've not met Tancredo, I've met Hunter, and I think that they're pretty good guys. And if that was, you know, if that was a choice, it wouldn't be, if that was the only choice, that wouldn't be too difficult. But my goodness, when you have a man of the quality of Ron Paul, who understands the Constitution better than any candidate probably in this in the previous century, in the last 100 years. Certainly better than anybody who served in the White House in the last 100 years. This is just a no-brainer, and he couldn't be possibly allowed to win. But it is his last hurrah, and we're going to miss him in Congress, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we are, particularly since, as you point out, he is virtually the only game in town. I mean, it reminds me of how peripheralized my own political positions have become in this country. When Ron Paul is the virtually the only guy out there that's even talking about the stuff that matters to me. I mean, that's right. The thing that keeps overpowering me as I watch these debates and all this commentary about these debates is that he is virtually the only person in the continued vanguard of what you and I certainly believe in, and minus him. It really is going to be an absolute vacuum, because I don't see that there's anyone else out there of his prominence and his intelligence and his grasp of the issues who's continuing to fight the good fight for us. I mean, this is basically looking like it's it, that aside from him, it's a very, very bleak picture.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, it's interesting. His presence in the primary, the Republican primary, will make it very difficult for third parties who are trying to gain ballot access. Because so many people who would otherwise, and who will vote third party in the fall, will not work for ballot access for him because for the alternative, because they want to vote in the Republican primary. At least in Texas, it works that way, and I think it does in several states.
Yes.
And so, but those people who really understand Ron Paul will not be voting Republican in the fall if they are faced with the likes of Giuliani or McCain.
Absolutely, and you know, this goes back, of course, to some of the ups and downs of the Buchanan campaigns in 1992 and 1996.
Of course,
I remember being in a situation where I was a delegate to the Republican state convention for the very, very last time here in Texas in 1996. And I remember with all of this discussion that was taking place there in San Antonio at the Alamo Dome about the fact that Buchanan had not yet gotten out of the race, with all of the various things that were being said that day, it was apparent to me that quite a number of people who had voted for Buchanan in the Republican primaries and who were delegates, albeit a minority of delegates to the state convention that year, that a considerable number of those folks really didn't seem to totally grasp the magnitude of the differences between Buchanan that year and Bob Dole and all of the other establishment candidates in the Republican Party, because it wasn't simply a question of saying, well, you know, once Pat gets out, then we simply throw our support to Dole. We're talking about an absolute chasm between the things that Pat Buchanan was talking about that year and everybody else.
You're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, that was my last year as well, as you recall, in that party.
It was mine too. We got out of Dodge the same year in the Republican
Party. That's right. For the same reasons. But I remember that in the primary of that year at the little precinct convention, we were allowed to introduce resolutions, at which I introduced a resolution. And I had not seen any other concerted effort. I don't know if it was I'm assuming that others may have introduced this resolution somewhere, but I feel very proprietary about it because my resolution called for changing, amending the Constitution, which I don't do lightly, to make it so that those who get here illegally are not citizens. And this not only went from our precinct to our senatorial district convention to state, passed at every level, went on to national, and made it into the platform of the Republican Party in, was it San Diego that year?
Yes.
And I happened to be walking past the television when a reporter was asking Bob Dole, who just received the nomination, if he would stand on that platform and on that plank in the platform. And he just said, that's ridiculous. Absolutely not. You know, here the guy who has won the... And it points out once again, the platform, which the party platform, which is a pretty darn good document in my opinion... not as good as it could be, perhaps, but it's very good, is irrelevant to the political process. The people who rule give that as a bone to the activists so that they think they're doing something.
Well, you know, that San Diego convention, I think, was an absolute watershed because the incident that you're talking about with Bob Dole is one that I, of course, I wasn't physically present there as you were when Dole was talking.
No, I saw it on TV, but yeah.
But I remember reading the account of it the next day in the San Diego Union Tribune while I was sitting in a motel out there in San Diego. And I thought, this is the first time in my lifetime that a Republican presidential nominee has admitted that he had absolutely no time for the platform. In other words, most of them are of that persuasion, but they simply don't talk about it. They would never in the past have admitted that the charade was finally revealed. But when Bob Dole indicated that he could care less about what was in their party platform, that he wasn't bound by any of it, that should have been the absolute ironclad proof of what people like you and I had been saying throughout that entire summer.
Sure.
And that was that if Bob Dole was the Republican nominee, that the entire platform process would be revealed for the joke that it ended up being, because there was absolutely no connection whatsoever between that platform and the political position.
Right.
Yeah, and the party's candidate who had a 30-year track record of denying 95% of what was in that platform.
Exactly. That's
yes.
Exactly right. And, of course, if that plank had become law then, wouldn't we have saved ourselves a lot of problems in the intervening decade?
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, I saw a statistic the other day, and it was Buchanan who brought it up in one of his articles. He was saying that in 1992, when he challenged George Herbert Walker Bush in the Republican primaries that year, that I believe there was something like 2 million documented illegal aliens at that particular time. And Buchanan was pointing out that all these years later, 15 years later, that figure has jumped to, depending on whose statistics we're looking at, somewhere between 8 and 20 million.
Mm-hmm.
So this
give it another 10 years and it will go up exponentially again.
Exactly. So this is where we are. And again, as I watch the Republican primaries, I'm amazed at the number of people that I know and I'm talking about family members and friends, who continue to vote for Republican presidential candidates, seeing no connection at all between these candidates and the globalist agenda that they promote. We'll be back with Daniel New and to talk about the Michael New case when Mark Gancos America returns live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Hi, this is John Statler, and I want to tell you about a new shortwave receiver that we're really excited about. It's the Kato KA1103, and let me tell you, this radio has features and performance of receivers costing 2 to 3 times the price. Features include dual conversion phase lock loop tuner for continuous coverage of the entire shortwave band, AM, FM, and medium bands, 268 memory presets, single sideband reception with fine tuning control, signal strength, meter, battery, power indicator, DX local select, tone select, auto backlight screen, extra long telescopic antenna, line out and external line in jacks, and many other features too long to list. And when you purchase a Kato KA1103, you just don't get a radio, you get an entire radio package, including an external antenna, stereo earbuds, and an AC adapter, rechargeable batteries, and a nice carry pouch. So if you've been considering buying a shortwave receiver or would like to upgrade from your present radio, the KA1103 at just $110 plus $9 shipping is an outstanding value. Call us at 800-724-2719. 800-724-2719.
Back. This is Mark Gancos America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined in the first couple of hours of the show by Daniel New talking about the Supreme Court's denial of his son Michael New's appeal to that body. And if you are not familiar with this case, you need to turn to MikeNew.com to find out all of the facts of this case, because the implications of this particular situation for every American will become apparent to you as you wade through all of the history of it since August of 1995. And Dan, as we get started in our conversation about what has happened to Michael, one thing that kind of leaps out at me as I'm looking at certain things that are in front of me that I printed up from last night is reference to something called Presidential Decision Directive 25. This thing apparently was touted as the legal basis of the order to send Mike under UN command when he was in Macedonia. What is Presidential Decision Directive 25, and what are the implications of it?
Boy, Mark, that is a great place to start because that is where the problems began, and it began in 1994 in January when President Clinton invoked this executive order, PDD 25, to establish the rules. And this is the document whereby President Clinton authorized President Clinton. And I should just stop right there and you know,
yes.
Constitutionalists already know how to regard the rest of the document without any authority at all. He authorized himself to place American troops under United Nations command under certain situations that he laid out very specifically in a 13-page document. And of course, it's without regard to the Constitution or any existing statutory law or Congress. He then classified that document so that no one can read it, not the soldiers who are being prosecuted under it, not the soldiers who are being sent to die under it, not your congressman, no one except those with the very highest of security clearances can read that document.
Boy, that's absolutely incredible. I mean, that here you have a situation where what the equivalent of an executive order is issued, the ramifications of this for placing American soldiers under the command of various bodies of world government is the apparent outcome of this. And yet none of us, for the most part, including those of us who've been elected to Congress, can even see what's in the document. That's just unbelievable.
Well, exactly. When Michael said to his officers, he said, there has to be a legal basis for every order. I know that. So let me see the legal basis for this one, to serve in Macedonia. And he was told, well, there is, they had to search for it. And they finally found that there was, the document was PDD 25, and they explained that to him. And he said, well, fine, let me see it. And they said, no, you can't see it. It's classified. And this is when he actually laughed out loud at one of his officers and said, you got to be joking with me. You know, you're telling me that you can prosecute a soldier and send him to prison, which is what you're threatening me, on the basis of an order that I'm not allowed to, on a document that I'm not allowed, a secret law, I'm not allowed to read it, nobody knows what it says, take our word for it. And he looked kind of chagrined, and he says, well, I guess that's the short of it, you still got to obey orders. And Michael said, well, he just folded his arms, and he said, well, then you may as well put me in prison, because I'm not going to obey that order.
It's amazing to me, the number of people in the American military, and for that matter, outside of it, who are supporters of the American military, which in one sense of the word, all of us are, so we need to be careful in what we're saying here. But when we start talking about the utilization of the American military at the behest of a so-called commander-in-chief, it would seem to me to be self-evident that in a constitutional republic, the utilization of that military and the utilization of orders on the part of a commander-in-chief to that military must be within the confines of the United States Constitution and what it tells us about how and when it is that we go to war and how it's done legally and constitutionally. If all of that is simply ignored, I don't see how anyone can avoid the conclusion that we are not only moving from republic to empire, but we are moving headlong into the full-blown development of a police state. I mean, the notion, for example, that a chief executive of this country can issue any order that he or she wishes that involves the disposition of American troops, and that order must be inherently obeyed simply because he or she has said so, is right back to the very brand of monarchy that our forefathers fled.
Sure, and hiding behind national security. Now, I would understand the battle plans for the coming war or for a battle cannot be put on the Internet. I understand that. You know, you can't tell them where the missiles are hidden or what the codes are. There's certain things you just don't tell the enemy or the public even. But this is just the new basis. You know, I don't know about you, but I miss the Republic already. And I don't know, Mark, if we're ever going to see it again.
Well, and that's my feeling too. And the thing that that again comes home to roost in this entire circumstance is that Presidential Decision Directive 25, to my knowledge, is something that hasn't been a topic of conversation in the major party presidential debates recently,
and won't be.
That's right. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio on RBN. Stay tuned for Daniel New.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today, 1-800-691-7898, and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
A message for all homeowners and prospective homeowners out there. If you reside in Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, California, or Utah, we can help you with financing the purchase of a new home or refinancing your existing mortgage. We now have a wide array of lenders for your purchase or refinancing needs. If you are looking for a cash-out refinance from an adjustable to a fixed-rate loan, paying down credit card debt, consolidating installment or other debt, or been wanting to invest in the safe haven of gold in the silver market but you've been sitting on the fence waiting for the right time, whatever your reason, give RBN a call and ask to talk to our mortgage professional. He can help you find a plan that fits your needs while he walks you through the process very simply and easily. You couldn't choose a better time to pay down debt or purchase gold and silver. And not only do you accomplish your goal, but you also help to support RBN in continuing to voice the truth. Don't wait any longer. Call us now at 1-800-724-2719. Again, that's 1-800-724-2719.
This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're speaking today with Daniel New about the Michael New case, about the fact that Mike's appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court was denied. For all of the details on this, you can go to www.mikenew.com. And if you want to go back into some ancient history in regard to the life of Daniel New and in regard to my own life, you can go to my website, markdankoff.com, and there listed on the articles page is a tribute that I wrote to Daniel New several years ago, which goes back to that fateful summer of 1996, when after the Pat Buchanan presidential bid was over with that year, Dan New and I both exited the Republican Party for all of the same reasons. Here we are 11 years
talking. Within a week, we were in the National Constitution Party, which was then called the Taxpayers Party's convention there in San Diego.
That's right. That's where we hooked up, and that's been an interesting time. At some point this morning, we might talk a little bit about the Constitution Party and about some of its pros and cons and what may or may not be its future. But yeah, we both made that incredible walk or incredible drive across the Coronado Bridge between San Diego and Coronado Island.
Yes.
To leave the Republican Party and to hook up with Howard Phillips, what was then known as the U.S. Taxpayers Party, what later became known as the Constitution Party. And I remember attending some of those seminars at Howard Phillips' convention that year and seeing all of the things being outlined at that convention, which underscored why I made the correct decision in my view, and Dan made the correct decision in my view, and leaving the Republican Party, not very much has changed since then. You know, Dan, in regard to this whole situation then with Michael, you've indicated in the latest release that you've sent out on this that there was a sudden change in the legal standard of review that was applied to your son's case. Unpack that for us a little bit.
Yeah, you betcha. The basically, at the very first Court of Appeals, the Army Court of Criminal Appeals, where we appealed the court-martial conviction. I guess I should back up and say at the court-martial, Michael's attorneys were not allowed to introduce any evidence to prove his the legitimacy of his decisions and his actions. And the judge just said, gentlemen, to the jury, he says, gentlemen, I have looked at the orders. I have determined the order was lawful. Therefore, you will not see any evidence in this case. You will only answer one question, did he or did he not obey the order he was given? So the charge was not related to a hat. The charge was just failure to obey a lawful order. Of course, they had to find guilty on that basis. He did disobey the order, and the whole question was why. So we appealed immediately on that process, on that basis. Said, wait a minute, everybody has the right to at least introduce evidence. And the Court of Criminal Appeals and the Army Court of Criminal Appeals said, nope, evidence is not a fundamental element of the defense. Which was a shock to every attorney, starting with ours. And even the JAG officers on the other side were astonished that they would say that the... In fact, there was a group of JAG officers in the Pentagon who came to us and said, we're thinking about filing an amicus brief on your behalf against our own boss here. Now, they didn't muster the courage to do that in the end, but at least they came to our attorneys negotiating, hey, man, this is going to be terrible for every defense attorney. And the Army Court of Criminal, then the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces held that up, and the Supreme Court refused to hear that petition. So it has now been solidified, and a revolution has taken place in terms of the Uniform Code of Military Justice and the military judicial system, that the evidence is no longer a fundamental element of the defense. It is now considered a discretionary element of the prosecution. We'll see it if we want to. Thank you very much.
Well, I tell you, the implications of that should be clear to every listener.
Well, it sure is. It'll work in a police state, won't it?
Yeah, sure. And where you have a situation where the basic position of the government, as I understand it, is this was a lawful order that was given simply because we say it's a lawful order. And because we say it's a lawful order, this is the way that the jury has to see it. We say it's lawful, therefore it is lawful. And therefore, we simply ask that you determine whether or not this lawful order was obeyed. That seems to be a repudiation of the position that the United States took at the Nuremberg war trials.
Judge Sullivan at the Army Court of Criminal Appeals raised that question with the attorneys for the government. And he said, I thought this, when they started off, you have to obey orders. Right off the bat, their arguments in D.C. and Washington. And he interrupted the young lady, I presume, that was presenting the argument, and he said, wait a minute, are you telling this court that a soldier has to obey all orders no matter what? It was a very awkward moment. I even felt sorry for her, even though she was on the other side, because she stumbled around, and he asked her the question again, and she stumbled around, and finally he rephrased it, and finally she said, yes, Your Honor. And he said, all right, you may proceed. I thought we had settled this question in Nuremberg.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just begs the question, doesn't it?
Yes.
I mean, you've got a situation where I can imagine if a chief executive of the United States said, we are going to utilize the United States Army today domestically within the continental United States to arrest every person in this country who has black skin or is an adherent to the Jewish religion, and they're going to be put in boxcars and shipped to concentration camps. I see no way, utilizing the legal rationale that was presented in your son's case by the government, that one could avoid the conclusion that, according to the United States government, soldiers would be duty-bound to obey those orders.
Well, that's right. Now, of course, keep in mind that this is a military setting, and I don't know that this doctrine or policy has yet extended into civilian courts, but that's where it will come next, of course, if we don't watch jealously.
Yeah, and it seems to me that this is where we really start getting into the all kinds of derivative things that, again, go right back to your son's case. I mean, we're talking about the whole history of executive orders in this country and the extent to which incrementally, for a period of many, many, many years, the whole business of unconstitutional executive orders is something that has not been dealt with by the American people, it seems to me.
Nor by Congress, then, right?
Yeah, nor by Congress, exactly. And so you've got a situation, clearly, where the my understanding of the executive order is that it was intended to be something to be utilized in the implementation of something that had been passed by Congress, not as a law in and of itself. And when you look at this whole business of executive orders, it seems to me that once again, in the latest, in terms of this conversation, is Presidential Decision Directive 25, there has been no attempt that I can see on the part of the United States Congress to say to these chief executives, no, wait a minute, this is clearly unconstitutional, it's clearly unlawful, you can't do this. And now, of course, in the years since your son's situation began in 1995, we have yet another American military involvement begun by a chief executive without a constitutional declaration of war. So here's that seamless garment once again. If you fail to confront a chief executive, if the Congress does, when he acts unconstitutionally and unlawfully, you can pretty much guarantee that there's going to be yet another time when he or she's going to do it, and yet another time when the next unconstitutional decision has even more draconian ramifications than the previous ones.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, then we have a situation where this is pretty much the way it played out in regard to what was said by the Army Criminal Court of Appeals. And yet when we get to the United States Supreme Court finally, it seems to me that there was no fundamental change in direction or even nuance on the part of the Supreme Court.
Well, no, and Judge Friedman at the district court level in Washington, D.C., did say one thing that we do agree with, although we didn't like the way it turned out and we didn't agree with his ruling. But he says, look, it's not a soldier's duty to correct the president of the United States. It is Congress. If president has run over the Constitution, the soldier needs to obey his orders. But and I don't agree with that half of it, but he says it's Congress's job to keep the president in line and to jealously guard their balance of powers that were entrusted to them by the founders and by the Constitution, and they haven't done it. Yes, Congress is AWOL, there's no doubt about it. And so in a sense, he puts his finger right on the problem and then just goes on to deny the case, saying maybe Congress should bring suit if it bothers them, but since they didn't, and I suppose that basically that's he's saying, where there is no interest, the Constitution will die for lack of reference or interest.
Well, yes, and it seems to me that another element in this, again, blurring the distinction between the military court system and the civilian, is something that was said recently by this federal judge that at one level was at least initially presiding in the Jose Padilla case. And this federal judge, whose name suddenly escapes me, made the statement that when it came to Mr. Padilla, that the Pentagon had the right to determine that anyone fit the category of a so-called unlawful enemy combatant, and that once that definition of the Pentagon was accepted, and the Pentagon would be the one to determine these matters, that from that point onward, that person, that particular American, could then be taken out of the civilian court system, taken out of all of the alleged constitutional guarantees that are a part of that court system, and could be held in detention by the United States military in perpetuity if it's so decided. Mm-hmm. So reading this recent statement by this federal judge in regard to the Padilla case, it seems to me that the sort of heads we win, tails you lose dynamic that certainly came forth in the Michael New case within the military court of appeals system is now something that's creeping into the civilian courts, in the sense that at least one federal judge has basically said, hey, if the Pentagon decides that you're an enemy combatant or an unlawful enemy combatant, that's exactly what you are. Mm-hmm. And once that definition has been accepted, and once the Pentagon's right to proclaim that has been accepted, they can then hold you in detention for as long as they want, and the entire writ of habeas corpus is simply down the tube.
Right, right. And without habeas corpus, you cannot... It is just so fundamental to liberty that and to this, it's one of the great checks and balances. And habeas corpus is virtually dead, both in the states and in the federal system.
And obviously, Dan, and you would know this better than virtually anyone, there would seem to be a complete disconnect between the number of Americans who are even aware of your son's case. A disconnect between even a peripheral awareness of the Michael New case and the understanding that this is precisely what has happened, and that what has happened to Mike New today within the confines of the military justice system could tomorrow be somebody else's situation, much like Padilla's case involving the civilian court system, where, again, the constitutional lines are being constantly redrawn to the point to where it seems to me that minus habeas corpus, the Constitution of the United States is essentially dead.
Agreed 100% on the last sentence. And at the same time, I think the disconnect is not with the people, because, amazingly enough, without the Washington Post ever carrying the story, and many other, I just pick on them today, and most mainstream media carrying the story, Michael New's name was a household word in 1996. And it was astonishing to me, because the news went out by fax more than in the beginning, and by bulletin boards and emails and telephone calls and talk radio. And that completely got the story to a saturation point. And to give you an idea, I mean, I would meet waitresses and truck drivers who knew the story and knew the name. And when we were in Washington for one of our hearings, I guess it was in 98, it was late. Joe Sager and I had gotten we needed a taxi, and it wasn't a long ride, and we saw a guy who was just gone off duty, and we asked him if he'd give us a ride, and because we're getting old and our knees were bad, and we had a long day. And he said, no, he said, I'm off duty, I got to pick up my wife from her job. And I said, look, it's real close, we can see the hotel way down, you know, mile down the road or two. And he says, oh, all right. So we jumped in, and he says, what are you all in town for? And we're in Virginia, Alexandria, Virginia. And we told him it was a case about Michael New. He whipped over so quick, I thought he was going to throw us out. He whips over to the curb, turns around and looks at us, and he says, you mean Michael New, the guy that, the soldier that wouldn't wear the UN uniform? And I said, yeah, that's my son. And what Joe said, and he stuck his hand back and shook my hand, and he said, man, he says, I am so honored to meet you guys. My wife and I have been praying for your son. And here's a black guy driving a taxi in Washington, well, in Virginia, who knew the story.
Yes.
The story was well known. Now, I think the average person who knew the story then has probably forgotten Michael's name, but has not forgotten the story. What I'm hearing everywhere I go is, what? That case is still alive? Up until a couple of weeks ago, people are still amazed to know, because it's ancient history to a lot of people. But the disconnect that you mentioned is between our elected officials and the people. There is such a huge disconnect that they are like an oligarchy who rule to please themselves and to please these special interests. And as one other taxi driver told me, he says, look, Mac, he says, Congress only has two jobs. I thought, well, this ought to be good. What's that? He says, to get elected and get reelected. And he put his finger right on the truth for a lot of people.
And it seems to me that when I look at the money trail, this is something I got into, of course, when I was running in the U.S. Senate race up in 2000 in Delaware on the Constitution Party line against Tom Carper and Bill Roth. Mm-hmm. And when I started studying the Federal Election Commission contributor lists of the two major party candidates, that in and of itself was rather eye-opening in regard to the fact that you could make the compelling case for the notion, not simply in the U.S. Senate race in Delaware, but in any federal race throughout the country at any level of the ballot line, that the amount of multinational corporate money going into these races basically makes the entire United States Congress, for the most part, with one or two exceptions, Ron Paul would be one of those exceptions, the creation of the multinational corporate state. And if that thesis is correct, then it seems to me that what we're talking about in the Michael New case is a circumstance where the political powers that be are no longer operating with any sense of concern for national interest. They are now operating as in primary concern for globalist interests and international, multinational corporate interests, and that in so doing, they are more than happy to have the American military used as a janissary force for those global interests.
There you go. There you go. I bet your listeners don't know what janissaries are.
Yes. Well, when we come back, we'll discuss janissaries because it seems that would be the implication of what's happened to our kids in the armed forces of this country. We'll be back. This is Mark Dan Pounce America coming to you live from San Antonio on RBN. We'll be back with Daniel New and his discussion of the Michael New case, which you can read about at MikeNew.com. Stay tuned.
Americans already realize our nation is in deep trouble, need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who is responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments. No refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
This is Mark Dantos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Special guest today is Daniel New, father of Michael New, talking about the Michael New case, which has been denied. The appeal has been denied recently by the U.S. Supreme Court, and you can read all about that at MikeNew.com. We posted information about this, by the way, at Breaking All the Rules News, with a link to MikeNew.com. As well as to Dan's other site, which is UN Free Zone, un-freezone.org. So if you go to Breaking All the Rules News and see the front page post we have there on the Michael New case, all of these URLs are available to you at a click, both MikeNew.com as well as un-freezone.org. And, of course, on that front page is a discussion of Dan New's latest release on this entire situation, dealing with a change, sudden change in the legal standard of review that was applied by the U.S. Supreme Court to this case. There is mention made there of Presidential Decision Directive 25 and all the implications of that and what it means to both civilian and military person alike in this country in regard to whether or not we continue to live in a constitutional republic or we don't. I wanted to mention to Dan New, as well as to the listeners, that this is a time of frequent commercial interruption on the Republic Broadcasting Network, that in the next few minutes we will have a series of these, and then there will be a longer period of time for more extended conversation. I'd like to take this opportunity to ask you to support the Republic Broadcasting Network, which you can do by contacting us in one of three ways. One is by telephone at 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. The second way is by the World Wide Web at www.republicbroadcasting.org. And the third way is through U.S. snail mail, where you can reach the Republic Broadcasting Network at 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. That's 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And if you can possibly support the Republic Broadcasting Network, we really urge you to do so. because along with the American Free Press in Washington, D.C., we're in the forefront of trying to provide alternative media to that which is under the aegis of the controlled corporate press and under its globalist masters. Certainly when we talk about the basic political divide, I